Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
I'm Poppy Tooker. Welcome to Louisiana Eats. Joel Salatin of Virginia's Polyface Farms is perhaps America's most famous farmer. Featured prominently in Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, he and his farm also played a major role in the documentary film Food, Inc. We sat down with the man that the New York Times calls the High Priest of the Pasture for an extended interview that is the focus of this week's show. But that's not all. I've got a delicious recipe for the leafy winter greens just starting to appear in Louisiana's farmers markets. And this week, we test your cookie knowledge with our culinary quiz question. This is Louisiana Eats. The New York Times describes Virginia farmer Joel Salatin as the high priest of the pasture. The stories of Joel's life on Polyface Farm feed both belly and soul of small-scale farmers and food producers worldwide. Joel, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm really looking forward to introducing our listeners to some of this thought-provoking work that you do. So let's jump right into it. You often describe yourself as a grass farmer. Would you explain that?
Well, the idea there is that grass is a crop. In our culture, you know, we worship grain. We worship tillage, the plow. We even subsidize the plow and grain. People are brain damaged about grass. They think of a lawn or a golf course. But when I say grass, I'm talking about Laura Ingalls and Little House on the Prairie, where the grass was 12 feet tall and the girls couldn't stray from the cabin unless they get lost in the grass. Grass is actually an incredible biomass regenerator, solar energizer. So when we say grass, it means we really honor the place of grass in the ecosystem and the place of grass as feeding the herbivore, lamb, goat, bison, cow, in the human food chain.
So how do you go about growing this grass?
Well, we don't actually plant it very much. We just, whatever grows, grows. I mean, do they have to plant grass in the side ditches of the road? No. And yet the grass grows there and they have to mow it, you know, or it takes over everything. And so the idea is to mimic the kind of herbivore movement that occurs in nature where, you know, the wildebeest on the Serengeti or the bison or whatever in nature where they move either by a hunting pressure, either four-legged or two-legged hunting pressure, and their own belly pressure looking for new forages and flies pushing them out of an area into another area. And so we don't have wolves and we don't have, we can't hunt our cows like, you know, in a primal sense. Mm-hmm. But we do have really high-tech computer microchipped electric fence. And that allows us to create a pattern or a template in this biomimicry and duplicate it on the farm to put the herbivores in the right place at the right time.
Well, you describe the whole farm as being the Polyface salad bar. Could you explain that?
Well, sure. Yeah, the idea of a salad bar is that it's somebody comes in and refreshes it all the time. It's not stale. It's great if you go in to have it, but if somebody locked the door in a restaurant and said, now everybody has to stay in here for a week, you know, by the end of the week, everybody'd be down to what, vinegar, onions, and garbanzo beans, or, you know, whatever it is that you like the least in the salad bar. And so the idea of the salad bar is that we are refreshing it every day for a new paddock for the chickens and the turkeys and the cows and the pigs. They're not in a continuous occupation. They're in this grazing. And then the second thing is, of course, the appeal of a salad bar is diversity. There's a lot of different stuff there to choose from. And animals have a palatability index, just like you and I. Not only a palatability index, but a diversified menu desire. In other words, a nutritional need. Some plants concentrate some vitamins, some concentrate others, some grow tall, some grow short. I mean, we're talking about this amazing diversity of plant life. And so by having the electric fencing or the electric netting or whatever it is that controls the animal to concentrate them and move them onto a fresh paddock every day, we freshen that forage for them like a salad bar, and that actually stimulates a diversified sward, a diversified multi-speciation as opposed to monospeciation. And all of that not only encourages a better blanket for the earth, for the soil, it also creates a more interesting and diversified and complete diet for the animals that are on that salad bar.
Well, let's discuss all the animals and their role. For instance, I would think that you would be the first one to say the worms might be the most important workers at your farm. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Dancing earthworms is one of my all-time best metaphors. And it all starts with the soil. You know, Sir Albert Howard, who gave to the world scientific aerobic composting, said that if you try to use artificials in the soil that make artificial plants, it makes artificial animals and then artificial people that can only be kept alive with artificials. And we can certainly see the growth of the pharmaceutical industry in our country to realize that we have, through artificials, created, in fact, a fairly artificial existence.
So it's the worms, the chickens. How do they all follow each other in this? In this big parade you've got going on every day at Polyphase.
Sure. Yeah, we call it a ballet in the pasture. So there are certain leader followers things. I mean, well, the earthworms, of course, they are living on decomposing biomass. I mean, that is part of the carbon sequestering picture. And so how does nature feed them best? It does it with perennials. And that's why all historical, even crop rotations, always had this multi-year period of a perennial pasture. Now, what's interesting was that was always enforced by the need for draft power. Today, with our abnormal cheap energy and petroleum age, we have been able to extricate ourselves from these historically required soil-building periods of time and plow everything. So we're able to destroy the soil way faster than anybody ever could in the past. So it starts with this perennial blanket, and then the animals move. The chickens follow the cows like the birds follow the, you know, the herbivores in nature. The pigs follow the cows in the hay shed in the wintertime and turn the compost, the bedding, and turn it into aerobic compost. We call them pig-orators. The turkeys go under the orchards, and the mushrooms grow in the mulch under the orchard trees, and the mycorrhizae hold the wood chips, the mulch, together so the turkeys can't scratch it out. So anyway, there's this beautiful component of all these different relational, symbiotic plant-animal relationships that actually mimic the kind of helps and cycles that nature creates.
That is really a beautiful dance. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. We were lucky enough to grab Polyphase Farms' Joel Salatin while on tour with his new book, Folks, This Ain't Normal. Your books have become increasingly controversial, at least with the titles. In this one, you shed special light on even American childcare. What's the problem with American kids today?
Well, for the first time in civilizational history, in human history, we now view children as a liability rather than an asset. We talk about how much it costs to grow a child, as opposed to what a child can add in value to the family. So if we go into historical normalcy, we're the first civilization that's raised the average child without chores. And, you know, think of the childhood chores that kids used to have with gardening, weeding the beans, helping mom can. These were all integral parts of growing up and incorporated children into the adult world. We have now segregated these children into a childhood of essentially non-involvement with the adult world.
Well, you had a lot of very interesting experiences that you recorded with some of your interns. Let's talk about healthy fear.
Yeah, we have noticed for a long time that when children grow up around animals, machinery, gardening, they come with a more humble approach to things. You know, if you don't water the tomato, it'll get dry and die. And you can't just snap your fingers and the video game gives you a new tomato plant. You know, around cows, you know, a herd of cows demands respect. You need to place yourself and be aware of what's going on. You can't just be walking around like a zombie with a bunch of tubes sticking out your ears, listening to crazy music while the cows stampede over you. You've got to be situationally aware and looking out, lifting your head up and looking out. And these are all really life awareness issues that I think actually help a person come in with a sense of duty, awareness, and purpose to adulthood.
Well, I know this certainly worked also with your son, Daniel, who, of course, is now on the farm with you, right, with your grandkids. Mm-hmm. It must be very heartwarming to have three generations right there together. You've been at this with Daniel for a long, long time. Tell us the story about the time you had to leave your son and your daughter with your mother, mm-hmm, and what you left Daniel in charge of.
Yeah, Teresa and I were getting an award. Daniel was about 8 or 9 years old. We were getting an award in D.C., so we had to be gone for 2.5 days. And we had, 110 cows at the time. And we left him in charge of moving the cows. He was 8 or 9 years old, and he just went out from mom's house, opened the gate, called the cows like he was used to being with me doing. And imagine, a herd of 100 cows, this little 8-year-old kid, he opens the gate, calls them, and they're used to being called to dinner, to a new salad bar every day at 4 o'clock. And he just opens the electric fence and they just go through. He closes it behind them. The move is done. I mean, what this does to self-actualization and self-worth and the need, the reason to be, for a young person to be needful in something meaningful. This isn't make work. This is real stuff. And it's extremely powerful in shaping the emotional psyche of an individual.
We are speaking with Polyface Farms' Joel Salatin, whose philosophies can often border on the extreme. Do you have a parakeet? Joel wants you to replace it with a chicken.
Some of the advice that you hammer home in the book, on more than one occasion, I have to say, is replace your parakeet with 2 chickens. Now, what are you talking about there?
Well, what I'm talking about is we come even to the greenie agenda. We can speak, I think, generally people know when we talk about the greenie agenda. It's a lot of things. But one of them is compost your kitchen scraps. We want to take this biomass and compost it rather than landfilling it. And I'm saying, let's go beyond that. We don't even need to compost it. Let chickens fill their historically normal role as homestead, farmstead, salvage operations and do the cleanup work. And so here we've got parakeets in a cage and you have to buy real special feed for them. They keep you up all night and they make a manure that's a toxic problem. Well, get rid of them. Put in 2 chickens. They will eat your kitchen scraps. You don't have to buy anything. You don't even have to spend the diesel fuel to put on a garbage truck to take it to a compost pile.
And
the chickens will lay you eggs.
How feasible is that, though, really, for city dwellers?
There are people doing it in New York City all over. They've been featured in the New York Times. The new Sheikin. It's the new Manhattan Sheikin. And absolutely, the chickens aren't as loud. They're much more functional. And their manure is so non-toxic, you can use it as a side dress on your flowers and your pots in your home and as a fertilizer.
And it's really important, I think, that you have led the way in this processing your chickens on the farm.
Yes, this is all a part of reducing the mileage. When you eat, most Americans, when they eat their meal, they're actually eating food that's seen more of America than the farmer that grew it. We're the first civilization that's put 1,500 miles under every morsel of food. That's unsustainable. We can't do that. If fuel becomes more expensive, the whole food system floats on a barrel of oil, essentially. And when we localize it, and I'm talking about, as you know, in this book, I'm talking about serious, whether it's the chicken kitchens or whether it's using the medians of the interstate to grow pears and apples, we can localize this. And when we do, it just creates a wonderful awareness, transparency, and integrity. in what becomes flesh of our flesh and bone of our bones.
Well, your normal really does make sense when you listen to the story that you're preaching. But do you believe that there's enough momentum and energy to fully bring about the changes that you're seeking in the world?
Oh, I think there's a, I call it a local food tsunami. We're in New Orleans. I'll call it a tsunami, not a hurricane. But people are jumping off of the Monsanto, the industrial food ship. And everybody's story is different. Sometimes it's just the taste. You know, who wants cardboard tomatoes? Sometimes it's a health issue. Sometimes it's an ecology issue. Wow, I'm going to change because what I eat today affects the landscape, the earthworms of tomorrow. And so everybody's story is different, but we are entering in our culture. We had the agrarian economy, then we had the industrial economy, then we had the information economy. Now we're heading into the regenerative economy. And that is a powerful confluence of factors. I'll give you young people. I do a lot of college campuses speaking, and you'd be surprised how many times I go and I'm speaking at a class and the professor says, if you don't mind, could you come a half hour early? Because the kids have made a potluck from their CSAs and their little patio gardens to come in and they want to feed you, you know? And I'm thinking, wow, where was this 30 years ago? This is a cool thing. And I'm very excited about it.
Well, you know, everybody accuses us of being slow in the South. Why do you think this kind of farming philosophy hasn't really hit us here yet?
Well, I think the main reason the South is a little slow on this, and you can track my speaking engagements to know that I definitely go north more than south and out into the San Francisco Bay Area. I think it's because the South doesn't have the hard winters to drive people indoors to sit by the crackling fire and read and think about the why. In the South, you know, we can work all the time. We're doing the how, you know, and we're working what's called in the business and not working on the business. And it could be just as simple as that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming south to talk with us all and especially to visit with us on Louisiana Eats.
Thanks, Poppy. It's great to be with you. It's good to be in the South.
Joel Salatin of Polyface Farm with his new book, Folks, This Ain't Normal. And now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what commercial ingredient is no longer available that was essential in the original preparation of spinach madeleine, is Kraft jalapeno cheese roll. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
Well, many of you didn't let the Thanksgiving holiday stop you from entering our culinary contest, and this week we're sending our love to the Magnolia State. Congratulations to Mike Walker of Biloxi, Mississippi. You're this week's culinary contest winner. Thanks to everyone who participated. We hope you'll send us a response this week.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what native nut is featured in a favorite Louisiana cookie shaped to resemble a moth's cocoon? Email your answers to LouisianaEats at WWNO.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what native nut is featured in a favorite Louisiana cookie shaped to resemble a moth's cocoon? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to LouisianaEats at WWNO.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
Most Americans view anchovies with great suspicion, having first encountered them as a dried-up, bony little thing atop a pizza. Anchovies are actually a true culinarian's best friend. Their contribution to a dish is an essential saltiness that becomes part of the body of flavor, not something that can be added from the salt shaker. With all the leafy greens showing up in Louisiana's farmers markets right now, it's a great idea to keep a roll of anchovy compound butter in your freezer, ready to complement them. Add a stick of butter to your food processor with a tablespoon of freshly cracked black pepper and 3 diced anchovy fillets. Process together until fully combined, then form into a log and store in your freezer, tightly wrapped in waxed paper. When you get those fresh greens home from market, wash thoroughly and trim off the rib. Melt a couple of tablespoons of the anchovy butter in a skillet and quickly sauté the greens for just a minute or two. Sprinkle with a little red or white wine vinegar and serve. Even if you think you hate anchovies, please give this a try. This quick, easy, healthy dish is just what your body needs in the midst of all the holiday excess, and I promise you won't taste anchovy, only the salty, delicious goodness they add. For a copy of this recipe, visit our Louisiana Eats website at wwno.org, where you can also easily email us with questions, remarks, and suggestions. This is Louisiana Eats. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, techno-romantic jewelry artist Thomas Mann with his new food-inspired pieces.
I've always loved food, and one of the things that happened back there in the Poconos was there was a local produce vendor called Pocono Produce, and we would stage art events in the produce warehouse.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe and the Bourbon House, Lights Egan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cookin' Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.